Well, it's 3 o'clock, and 3 o'clock is special guest time. And today I'm welcoming via WhatsApp Sonia Lakshman, who is an author who's written an amazing book called The Return Present. So I'm about to call her now. Okay, let's go. Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hang on a minute. Let me just make sure I've got my volume up. Can you hear me all right? Oops. Hello, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I'm hearing you better now. Okay, Sonia, thank you very much and welcome to I Heard a Rumor on Costa Calida International Radio. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you, Ruma. Thanks so much for having me on. How are you?
Yes, I'm good. The sun's shining. There's nothing to complain about here. Sonia, let's get straight on to the interview. Now, first of all, tell our listeners a little bit about you.
Okay. So, hi, everyone. I'm Sonia Lakshman. I live in England. So, the sun isn't quite shining, so actually I shouldn't have come on this radio show at all out of pure jealousy. I work on climate change and nature recovery, and I've also written a novel called The Return Present.
Okay, so tell us... Sorry, I'm getting some feedback here. Okay, I'm just going to put you away from the... from the microphone, because I don't know why I'm getting this. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can.
Sorry. Okay, let's let's start with about the book. So, without giving any spoilers away, tell us a little bit about what your book's about.
Okay, so it's about the lives and loves of a family of pretty feisty women in India. The center stage is the matriarch of the family, who everyone is in total awe of and who is always right about absolutely everything. Then there's her very excitable sister, whose daughter Mehnaz is everyone's darling. So the crux of the story is that both sisters consider Mehnaz their daughter, not genetically, but like in terms of affection.
Yeah.
So when something happens that completely turns Mehnaz's life upside down, they have a massive and very ferocious fight over her future. So it's a love story, really, a love triangle of a very different kind. You know, who will be right? What will be lost? What lengths will each go to win? So it's about, you know, family dynamics, rivalry, dominance, and then, of course, very, very, very deep love. And most of all, that not everything precious can be owned.
Yeah, I mean, it is very different to what you might expect when you're reading a book about Indian women. And that's what I liked. Mm. It moved right away from the stereotypes, doesn't it?
Totally. Although I have to say, the stereotype shouldn't exist, because Indian women are the absolute bomb, you know, and they're feisty, they're bright, they're smart. So it's kind of almost an old paradigm. That's
yeah.
The way that we can think of that. But certainly for the time that it was set in, yep, they were absolutely up there.
Absolutely. And that was good, because they put education to the forefront for women, whereas I think maybe our views or our thoughts was that education was really just for men. Women were supposed to be homemakers. Perhaps, you know, a little bit how it was like in England as well, in Victorian times, or, you know, earlier or later than that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, the novel starts in about the 1950s, like that's where it begins. Mm-hmm. But then the main character and the education that's centered around is in the, you know, the 1980s and around that time, and it sort of all blends in terms of timelines. But like, Indians massively put education first.
Mm.
You know, that's it's literally why all Indians are doctors, lawyers, and, you know,
accountants, absolutely.
Because they're so much, more qualified than the rest of us. So, and as far as women's education goes, I think, certainly around the 80s and things, it was absolutely the same as everyone else's.
Yeah.
So I think things have moved on quite a bit from how it used to be and how we can often think about it.
Well, I must say that I found it an amazing book. It was beautiful and I really enjoyed it. And I'd like to know what inspired you to write it.
Well, thanks for saying that, Rima. And I'm really glad you enjoyed it. All my life I've wanted to write, like literally all my life. And I think basically in my DNA I'm a writer. But I literally couldn't think of a single thing to write. So I had a few like dabbles at stuff, but you know, to be honest, they were pretty useless. And I'm really glad they were pre the cloud, so they're not actually stored stored anywhere that I can really remember. So basically, I sort of just gave up the dream, but I just forgot about it. I was like, yeah, great, you want to be a writer, but you can't think of anything to write. So I just let it go. But it was probably still there, subliminally.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, maybe 15 years ago from like the big writing thing when I really tried to do some stuff, I decided I wanted to go along to a creative writing course. And mainly, to be honest, at that point, just because I wanted to do something creative, I wanted to be in that kind of creative environment. So I signed up for one at Faber and Faber in London. And I had literally no intention of writing a book and zero ambition. I went along just to have a good time and just to enjoy myself, do something different, you know, be immersed in that kind of world. So I almost fell off backwards myself when I actually came up with a book. I literally couldn't believe it. It was a surprise in many, many ways.
It's quite strange that you say that you did a course, a creative writing course. You've always wanted to write, but when you did the course, you didn't want to write.
I know, right? I mean, it was just so liberated, you know, because I didn't have any pressure. I didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's how we're all at our best, you know, whether we're playing sport or we're dancing or we're in a social situation. If we're relaxed and we've got no agenda whatsoever, then it just flows.
Yeah, I agree with you there, because I think sometimes, especially if you go on a course that's really specific and pertinent to one subject, and which creative writing is, then it's almost like the pressure is there right from the beginning that you've got to write something amazing or you've got to write a book. And the fact that you went in there without those preconceptions is quite refreshing, really.
Yeah, honestly, it was just lovely. I mean, I wish I'd carried that lesson in more areas of my life.
So tell us how it helped you then. How did the creative writing class help?
I mean, do you know what, Rima? If I hadn't gone, I would never have written this book. So while the course didn't actually help me write the book, it was a catalyst. So basically what you had to do was for each... And it was the first creative writing course I'd been on. It was just an evening course.
Mm-hmm.
So they do like full on, you know, proper novel writing courses. But I just did an evening one. And basically for each lesson, you were given an exercise to do, you know. So it was something prescribed, often quite mundane. No disrespect. It's just to get you like writing.
Mm-hmm.
So like write about your journey home or create a character, that kind of thing. But it was nice. It sort of just got us all writing. But then for the last two sessions, you had to go off-piste and just write your own thing, like no brief. And I just found myself writing the story. I mean, it was just really bizarre. It wasn't even really a conscious decision. It just sort of happened. You know, so it's set in the childhood home of one of my really, really, really dear friends. we grew up together, basically, and we spent our whole, literally every waking hour in that house. So there's nothing about that house that I can't see in my mind. So it was really, really easy to write. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the characters, Menaz, the daughter that I just mentioned, is very much based on my friend's character. You know, not her story. You know, not Menaz's story. That's completely fictionalized. But her character is basically her. Mm-hmm. None of that would have actually happened if I hadn't gone along to the course and they said, right, you've got to go off and write something, you know, and I sit down and I'm sort of going, oh, not quite sure what I'm going to write about. And I suddenly just find myself writing this story.
Okay, so at the beginning of your course, and they'd say to you, write about something mundane like your journey home, etc. Did you then, when you've written it, did you then have to come back to your next class and read it out to the rest of the class?
Yeah, so you didn't actually have to read it out, thank goodness. But what did happen is everyone had to circulate their work, and then everyone had to read it. I think there were about 10 people on the class. You know, it wasn't massive, it was just about the right size. And then you come back to the class and then you critique. So you don't, not everyone gets to critique. And some people can be quite brutal. One person said to me, I literally don't know what you're talking about.
So, I mean, it's a bit cheeky, really, getting to, because nobody's got experience of writing, I'm presuming. So you come into this creative writing course and you're all kind of in the same boat. So what makes one person better than another person to critique their work?
I think it's more kind of you're critiquing it as a reader. Okay. So it's not you're just reading the work and then you say what you felt, maybe what you liked, maybe what you didn't like so much, or where you asked where is it going, or all of those kind of things. Sure. So it's more putting your work out there. It's not as scary as it sounds, to be honest. It wasn't. I mean, there were moments, like I said, when this person said, I literally have no idea. But it made me laugh. You know, it was that kind of vibe. It wasn't, you know, serious or, you know.
Okay.
I mean, some people were obviously very, really, really wanted to write and were there for a really strong reason. And that was lovely too. And I think I would say that generally was what people wanted to do.
Sure. So when you actually wrote your book, were you still doing your creative classes?
No. So for the last two lessons where I said you have to go off piece.
Yes.
I started it for one of those.
Uh-huh.
And interestingly, Rima, I really didn't want to send it in. Because I just felt, oh my God, I just feel a bit embarrassed, really. And then I thought, no, you have to send it in. Don't be a wimp. Send it in. And that was one of the times I think either my work was being read or, you know, I can't remember exactly how it worked. But I do remember walking into the room because I was always late. Walked into the room. Everyone was sitting down and everyone turned towards me. And there was like this little hush, and I just stood there and I was like, oh my God, I think maybe they think this is good. And then it was like really a moment. And then the teacher, who I absolutely loved, he was like the most grumpy person you have ever come across in your entire life. Like literally the most curmudgeonly bloke.
Yeah.
But I loved him because he was like so sincere. And he said, because he literally never gave hardly any praise ever, because that's just how he is. So when he did get praise, it was good, you know. And he said, oh, this is lovely jubbly. And I almost fell over backwards. It was kind of an instant, what's the word? Like it's not a validation because I wasn't looking for validation. It was more like, oh, okay. And then what happened was I just found myself carrying on. So the whole process felt really organic.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It was lovely.
Go on.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was going to say, but it was lovely that it started in that way. Like, yeah. I always remember the start of the book and going into that class and getting that reaction.
Absolutely. I mean, so when you, obviously, you finished your class and you wanted to continue with your book, did you have an actual writing process? Did you sort of sit down every day at 6 o'clock and write, or did you walk about the house with a notebook and pen? Did you have a process? How did it go?
So, honestly, Rima, like, it was just one of the most creative periods of my life. I felt completely in tune. So it just flowed. You know, so what I would do was, I would work, I had a full-time job, obviously. So I would work in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say work, I meant I would sit on the sofa with my computer and write for a couple of hours. And then I would go to work and then I'd come back and then I'd write, I don't know how long, in the evening. Like, it was one of the very few times in my life where I actually lost track of time.
Wow.
I've always been envious of these people who go, I lost track of time. Like, how do you lose track of time?
Yeah,
you know, I'm always thinking
yeah.
about whether what I'm going to eat or whether I'm late or, you know, whatever. But so it just, everything just flowed. And, you know, I'd always carried notebooks. I'd always scribbled down bits of conversation for years, descriptions of people, you know, and it was all sort of there in my subconscious, and it just poured onto the page. So, you know, yes, I'd work at it, but it didn't feel like work. It felt really effortless.
Yeah.
And I was done really fast, you know, like, I think a couple of months. I can't pinpoint it exactly.
Wow.
But, like, around
you didn't have any, you know, when people talk about writer's block or you hit a wall or anything like that, did you suffer from any of that?
No. Like, literally, I'm scared to say it.
No, it's amazing.
You know, it was amazing. It really was. It just honestly was a period of complete flow.
Now, my next question, but I feel like that there are no lows here, but I think there might be. I want to know about the highs and the lows of writing, because I'm sure there's people out here who are listening, and everyone has a fantasy, or a lot of people have a fantasy about, you know, sitting there in an armchair and the ideas just come to you, and you know, it flows, and you just are amazing, and the words just bubble out of you. But tell me the highs and the lows of writing.
Well, I mean, listen, don't forget that this has been preceded with like 30 years of nothing. So, you know, let's put that into perspective. But so, yeah, I think a high was just, oh my God, I'm writing and this is just totally enjoyable and I just loved it. I couldn't quite believe it was happening, but I was like, oh my God, this is literally all I've dreamt of and here I am doing it. So that was the high. There was one low point. So, you know, you were saying about stereotypes. So I definitely had this very romantic image in my mind of what writers do, and one of the things that they do in my mind is that they go off to really isolated places, you know, which are ideally like a little bit windy and moody or whatever. And then they write in, you know, solitary splendor for days and weeks. And then they come back with this thing. So I had this image in my mind. So I thought, oh, I better do that. Forgetting that, you know, I actually lived on my own. So I didn't even need to actually go anywhere for solitary splendor. But I hired this shepherd's hut. Like, honestly, the family still laugh about this story.
You hired a shepherd's hut.
I hired a shepherd's hut, which was basically a tiny little caravan thing that they'd made look a little she. It was like on Airbnb.
Okay.
It didn't come with it. It came with, there was no shepherds and there was no sheep. It was just like this little hut in the middle of nowhere. And so off I went, you know, packed all my stuff, took my dog, took my computer. Total disaster. So middle of nowhere, there's a massive wasp's nest under the hut. So and my dog, who has actually already been stung by a wasp in the past, just was completely having a fit and spent his entire day spinning around trying not to get stung while I was trying to ignore him and write a paragraph. then the farmer, I mean, honestly, because I'm a total animal lover, so, and I'm sure anyone would just, I don't know what they'd even do if this happened, but the farmer next door started shooting his pigs. like beautiful, beautiful pigs. And you're not even really allowed to do that in this country. You've got to take them to an abattoir. But anyway, so these beautiful pigs who I've been looking at every day all started screaming. It was awful. Absolutely awful.
So the pigs started screaming. Mm, oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah, exactly. So I bundled us. I was like, okay, I am out. So I bundled us into the car. Dog is massively relieved. And drove home and came back. And sat on my sofa, and which, as it turned out, was perfectly fine. And and then just carried on. Yeah. So
that was a low point, but also it just showed you that, you know, you didn't really need to go anywhere or do anything. The writing itself was totally immersed in your writing anyway. So you didn't need to do all that.
No, I didn't. I was just like totally in love with an image. I was a bit disappointed when it didn't work out.
Okay, so now, is there a sequel or is there another book, or am I putting too much pressure in asking you that question?
You have. So, yeah, not sure. I mean, maybe, like, it's not here yet. Ruma, honestly, I know better now than to chase the story.
Yeah.
You know, when they're ready, they come.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
So
we'll see.
So this book now, I want to know, because I loved it, and I want to know how it has been received.
So I'm totally over the moon. I love that you loved it so much. And honestly, people really, really love it, like a lot. So, and actually that's been men and women, because I would say it's more of a women's book generally, but apparently not, you know. So quite a few men have read it and they've gone, oh my God, I can't put this down. So yeah, it's been great. You know, I mean, it's early days. So far they've been pretty much all 5-star reviews, which is lovely. I had my first 3-star review last week. I was like, oh my God. Because when I check on Amazon and every time there's a new review, I go, oh, a new review. And I went on, it was a 3-star. I was like, oh no. So it was a bit of a shock. And then you go, okay, it's good, because you've got to get used to the fact that not everyone is going to like your book, and they're just not.
Yeah.
So I brushed that one off.
Yeah, yeah, brush that aside.
Yeah, exactly. But generally, it's going down. It's going down a real treat. So I'm really, really happy about that.
Yeah, because I have to confess to our listeners that I asked my book group to read it, and I didn't tell them that I knew the author, so I wanted to get an honest review. I didn't want them to be nice, because they thought, oh, well, she knows her. So, and the ones that read it really loved it, and they actually said that this was a better book than some that have had publishers publish their books. So, I mean, that, and going on, leading on from that, you self-published. So tell us how that was, how easy, difficult, if there are any budding authors out there, what was the process? How difficult or easy was it?
So I think the first thing to say is it's super, super hard to get an agent or a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you have to get an agent first. So super, super, super hard. What I would say is that's just how it is. I used to work in the music industry, so I've seen, you know, the other side of that on the music side.
Sure.
So the first thing is never, ever take it personally. I had the advantage of knowing that because I genuinely didn't take it personally. I sent it to loads of people, mm-hmm. and I had, you know, a couple who said, oh, we can see that the quality of writing is really fine, but it wasn't for them at that particular time. But nothing happened. So I thought, actually, I just let it put it in a drawer for a little while. And then I thought, do you know what? I think I'm going to put it out there. And since then, self-publishing has moved on massively.
Yeah.
So I self-published it because it used to be where you had to pay.
Okay.
So it was more like a vanity project. You know, spend a few thousand pounds and you get your print run done and then you distribute it, etc. Whereas now, so there was also an element of risk. Whereas now, Amazon have something called Kindle Direct Publishing, which is not limited to Kindle, by the way. That's just what they call it,
uh-huh.
which is just phenomenal. It's phenomenal, Ruma. So you can, you basically write your book, obviously, and then you can either format it and design the cover yourself, or there's tons of people who can, you know, you can just pay them to do that for you. I did it myself, but it's really, really easy to get all the help that you need. And then you publish it on Amazon. So the reason it's so brilliant is, first of all, you've got a marketplace. So, you know, you've actually got a channel to market for your book. And second, you've got and a review system. So, you know, the more reviews you get on Amazon, the more your book's going to do well.
Yeah.
And also you've got zero upfront costs. Zero.
Oh, fantastic. Because
they take a cut, quite a large cut actually, but still a cut of.
Do you earn from that then? You do earn from it.
Well. Yeah, I mean, yes, but I'm putting everything back into Amazon advertising.
Okay.
So that people can find the book. And I've been fiddling around with that campaign for a while because it's not a skill set. And it's finally starting to work. So again, if anyone's thinking of doing that, definitely invest in that. It will start to pay off and your advertising will start to pay for itself, which mine is just about starting to do, which is just fantastic.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. So,
it's great. So, yeah, a message in summary, don't be discouraged. The publishing world is changing. You know, BookTok, for example, is huge. It's just massive. And there are authors on there who are selling in their millions who've never had a publishing deal in their life and don't even want one because they earn all that money. There's no cut.
Okay, I've never heard of BookTok.
So it's like a sub-community of TikTok. And to check it out, the number one seller on Amazon right now started there. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But it's huge. Like, yeah. It's massive. So basically what I would say to everyone is now the world has changed so much. You can take it into your own hands and you can drive your own stuff and you can drive your own sales. I would still love a publishing deal for my book. I think... Actually, I really do think that it needs that to really sell the way I'd like it to.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's probably because I'm really rubbish on social media and things. So, but I think, totally rubbish. But so that's what I would really love to see happen. Who knows? You don't know what today holds, let alone tomorrow. So
exactly.
We'll see where things go.
Right. Well, Sonia, thank you so much. We have reached the end of our time. I want to say thank you so much. The book is called The Return Present, and it's by Sonia Lakshman, which is LakSHman. Please, listeners out there, go on to Amazon. Please order it. You will be pleasantly surprised. I know I was. It's not really the sort of book that I would think of picking up, but when I read it, I loved it. So, Sonia, thank you so much for taking time out of your day, and good luck with whatever's next and continuing sales with this book.
Thank you, Ruma. Thanks a million for all your support and for having me on. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Okay, bye then.
Bye.